So in this episode of the Future Car Podcast, Nand Kochhar, VP of Automotive and Transportation Industries, and I, Connor Pike, Thought Leadership Team Writer, we're going to continue a series of conversations on autonomous vehicles and how they will shape the future of mobility. As the automotive industry moves into the future, automotive companies are faced with the challenge of designing increasingly complex vehicles to satisfy consumer demands for greater automation, convenience, and connectivity. AVs are only expected to exacerbate this trend of growing vehicle complexity. So, how do companies address growing complexity in vehicle design, and how do the specific needs of autonomous vehicles change and affect this process? So, to discuss vehicle design today and tomorrow, Nand and I are joined today by Mark Sampson, MBSC Product Manager at Siemens Digital Industry Software. So, welcome, Mark. Thank you so much for joining us today. Just to get started, I'm hoping you can give the listeners a brief summary of your experience in the world of product design.
Well, so good evening, good afternoon, everyone. Now, this is, Mark Sampson. As far as a background on myself, I came out of college and went to work in the high-tech electronics business. And I was experienced in circuit boards and electronics design chips and so forth. And then after 14 years, I realized that my brilliant designs were affected by other people's decisions, and so I decided I needed to have a systems engineering background, and so I went and got a master's degree in systems engineering in Southern Cal. And then after I came out of that, we went back to work on trying to develop systems engineering tools to help with our complex development products, chipsets and stuff like that. There's this great quote from IEEE that kind of describes the situation. They said, we're getting pretty good at chip design. 90% of them work as designed, but 50% of them fail when we plug them in. So the idea here is that we need to start thinking wider about our problems. It's just not a chipset, it's how that chip works with the rest of the system and does the job it's supposed to do. So after we did that, we did a bootstrap startup. There was 12 of us that decided to do that. We successfully made it. We were acquired, eventually ended up at Siemens with about 30 years worth of experience in this area. We've been involved with many different companies, many different industries, medical devices, automotive, Aero and others, on how to apply systems engineering and applying models to that practice in a variety of places. So it kind of gives you a sense of my background. So I'm coming up on, I guess it's 25, 30 years at Siemens.
Awesome. That's great. Broad and deep, I would say, in terms of your experience in this area. This is to both Nand and Mark. I'm thinking we can just set the stage for the conversation we're going to have today. And I think we can do that by just talking about how would a traditional automotive design process get started? You know, how are requirements or targets identified, and then how are these documented?
So I could probably let Nand tell you how it works. From my experience, is you start where you were in the last year's automotive year and try to add capabilities to it or features to that product. In the case of other organizations we've been in, it's usually 80% of products. This coming year's product is based on what was done last year. Nand, I'll let you add to that and based on your experience in automotive.
Yeah, definitely. It starts with the customer requirements. So, you know, a lot of either the marketing and the research organization doing what products are needed. And it starts at the highest level at the customer requirements, and then cascades into what are the engineering requirements to deliver that product. And traditionally, it has been documented in, I would say, the standard formats, which is Excel, and several documents in the drawers of different organizations, and those things are not connected. That's the traditional process in the automotive industry. Of course, what Mark alluded to over the last few years, that those things have already been getting, that instead of a paper-based, getting into capturing those requirements in some kind of systems. And that's the starting point in the automotive industry, that getting those requirements, the real challenge starts to come into is how are they cascaded and how are they further communicated, not only internally across different domains of product development and manufacturing, but also across the supply chain and the entire ecosystem. So you see it's a varied degrees of documentation today, because the traditional to today's world has been on this path of moving into digitalization. And I think Mark touched on a very important point, which I hope we'll be discussing a lot more in there, the feature function based. And those are the things which are kind of one of the contributors towards increasing complexity.
I was just going to say, just to kind of give you a sense, since we're leaning towards why autonomous vehicles are forcing things to change, the process that Nan just described to you with the requirements and documents or spreadsheets is just not scaling, because we're now talking about not just the requirements associated with the vehicle itself, but the things that are interacting with this vehicle in the outside world, those kinds of things. And so we ended up with hundreds of thousands of requirements to keep up with. And what we're discovering pretty quickly here is that text does not scale. And so we have to move to a more abstract version of those requirements, which is typically done in models. And so that's what's one of the forcing functions that's going on in not only automotive, but all kinds of industries, because we're getting just too complex in that regard.
So even today, you know, current vehicles are already kind of straining the traditional method of keeping these requirements and cascading them.
And our goal here is to have these requirements show up at the right place at the right time. So when somebody's making a decision about and that affects a requirement, it's ability to comply with a requirement, it's there in your face. So you can be influenced by it to build compliance by design into your products, into the automotive, into the car.
Yeah. And Connor, since this topic is around autonomous vehicle, I'll say even about ADAS features on those autonomous vehicles. Now, the definition of vehicle has changed. In other words, in a traditional one, we didn't have autonomy in the vehicles. Vehicle systems would be considered a full vehicle, and then the subsystems, chassis, body, electrical, electronics. But now, when you have an autonomous vehicle running, vehicle is part of the bigger system. It has cameras, LiDARs, radars, the sensors. They are looking out on the road, what's out there. And now you have to look at a system in its entirety, including the traffic, including the traffic lights, as a couple of these examples. So now you see all of a sudden, your problem definition has grown from a vehicle to a system of systems problem. It's just like in the aerospace industry, that now system of systems becomes equally important in automotive industry as it has been in the space or the aerospace industry.
So we talk about already, even with modern vehicles, some of these development processes are not scaling. But when we talk about an autonomous vehicle, I think we often talk about it as kind of a step change. You know, things are going to quickly become even more complex. And so is it that system of systems, you know, the layering of all these different things, is that what makes it so much so heightened, I guess you could say?
Well, I guess before Nan steps on this one, I'd say I point out to you is that the system of systems is causing us to have to think at a totally different level. We have to start with an understanding of the environment within which this vehicle is going to live, you know, all the other things going to interact with other outside systems, other vehicles, etc. That's what he's referring to here. And that means that the way you used to do things with focusing on a set of requirements for an individual vehicle or a set of models that is used to describe some performance aspects need to consider that system of systems from the very start instead of discovering it too late in the right side of the development practice. I'll let Nan add to that.
Yeah, no, exactly. Mark is right on the money. This is where at the architecture level, you have to start thinking differently. So that's why the problem definition, when you think of autonomous vehicle versus a traditional vehicle without autonomy, you have to think differently, you have to plan differently. It is no longer just taking a signals or a cascade of requirements from one system within a car to the other system. It makes you think differently and plan differently. And that's where the architecture starts to come into play. Traditionally, we have talked only about automotive architectures, but now you have to think about the software, network, and all those architectures, and they all have to come together. And all that corresponds into the electrical electronics architectures in the vehicle. So now you can see you're basically multiplying these degrees of complexity by adding any of these things we are talking about, and that's complexity just goes through the roof.
And so how do you deal with that complexity would be the question. I'm thinking we're going to talk more about that here, but There's this Conway's law says is that we develop products based on the organization structures that we live in. So that means the electronics guys are off doing their thing, mechanics guys are off doing their thing, software guys are doing their thing. And then the traditional way is we spend lots of time on the right side of the product development process during verification and validation, identifying the issues and trying to get everything to work together, right? That's what we do. That's traditional. The problem is that these systems are so huge and so complex, we can guarantee there's going to be some integration problems. And of course, it gets really expensive on the right side of the V, as I use that term. And so the end result is that we end up spending our experiences and are talking to various people, you're going to spend half your program schedules getting everything working together. Now, in the past, you probably could have got away with that. But nowadays, we're talking such complexity here, you just can't get away with it. It gets really expensive. Not only to develop the product and get it out the door, but you have this tendency to do things like, for example, if something changed, let's say, for example, a regulatory requirement changes, in the traditional way, you would have gotten a bunch of experts in a room and a configuration control board maybe, and you would say, okay, this requirement changed, where does it go? And everybody will sit around and talk about it based on their experience and expertise. And the result is then they'll try to document it, maybe do some trade studies to see where things go, but because things are so complex, you can't possibly catch them all. The end result is you kind of cross your fingers and say, okay, let's go ahead and make this change and hope nothing bad happens later. And then there's these interesting downstream effects, right, that NAND is fully aware of recalls on vehicles and stuff like that of things that escaped us, right? And so we're talking about a fundamental shift here of getting everybody on the same page all the time. And that's where our product lifecycle and system lifecycle solutions come in, because they have to be able to understand all these interactions. The digital thread is another term they use to see where things go. And the interesting thing about today with the complexity, the way things are, is even making no decision is a decision, because everybody's moving on with or without you. And so you got to know the implications now versus later. Otherwise it gets expensive and everything else goes along with it. So it's a different way of thinking about the problem, because you can't do things how you've always used to do it. That's where it comes down to.
Yeah. Do you think accelerated development cycles that seems like it would be just another thing adding on to this challenge that is facing automotive designers today. Things are moving faster, right? That's at least from an outside perspective, it seems like these teams have to keep working faster and faster and faster to keep up with the competition.
You're absolutely right. Again, a couple of these things don't go away. So the industry is under a lot of pressure to adapt, let's say, electrification and autonomy. So that is bringing a fundamental change. So they have to go faster, because someone is already out there offering these features and functions without naming a particular company. So now majority of the industry is kind of trying to follow and, from a business perspective, get ahead in the game. So it puts a lot of pressure from timing. Now, this kind of thing is... other things going on in the industry are not helpful. Skill set of people trained in all these things is not out there. So it's not that you can put a ton of more people on the projects, because the skill sets is not there. So that puts another pressure that you got to maintain the timing, and it becomes even more important what kind of solutions companies use so that they can improve the reuse of the design. So in other words, if a company has a 10 vehicle lines and you went through this new process of development on one vehicle line, you should have the ability to move on from one vehicle to the next vehicle without reinventing the whole thing. So I think that pressure is there. And then obviously the cost. So if you can't contain your development in a structured way, and that's where I think we both are talking, that's where the systems engineering becomes your only solution, are the key enabler that you can reproduce stuff from one vehicle line to the next. That saves you on the cost, the reuse of the design, reuse of the engineering, reuse of the prototypes if you're using those in there. All that adds up, and that happens only through the systems engineering approach followed by the company.
Yeah, so maybe we can talk a bit more about that systems engineering approach. And Mark, maybe you can start on this one. You know, I'm curious, how does this actually work in practice? Like, how can a company adopt a systems engineering approach? In particular, you know, we're talking about it in the context of the digital twin or the digital thread. So, yeah, so how would a company go about taking that on?
Okay, so a systems approach, as they describe it in the standards, it's been around for some time because there's been a variety of very complex systems that force people to develop this practice. So a systems approach begins at the far left, as Ned was talking about, at the system of system level, where you describe or capture what the outside world looks like, and that becomes a set of turns into a set of constraints within which you have to live and work, right? And of course, that describes the regulatory aspects, includes the physics, includes lots of other things, weather, you know, all those kinds of things that you need to be worried about. And out of that process then would come this set of constraints and use cases and requirements that would then be used to start into the, like the concept development phase. And then of course, we go into the concept development phase where we developed a series of various conceptual approaches to dealing with the problem. Then we down select and move into the full up design part of the problem. And eventually we get down, of course, after that, we get down into the CAD development, you know, mechanical, electrical, physical, and so forth and so on. That's kind of how the process works. That system engineering practice or process, of course, is backed up by models along the way. I think Nand will probably agree with this. I had one conversation, Nand, with one engineer or one engineering manager, and he told me that he thought there was something like 10,000 decisions involved with creating a vehicle, and each of those decisions are backed up by multiple models. And yet he said that we had a hard time keeping up with which version of which model was going with which decision and those kinds of things. So the point is, as you were asking about the systems engineering practice, it starts on the left and then describes, and then it's supposed to carry through the entire development process, because what happens is we've done this development work, we created the digital threads or the relationships that run through things. So we know where a requirement goes. In the past, it was done with paper and you had to go chase it through paper. But now today's systems allow you to carry that requirement digital thread through all the various views. For example, a requirement would show up inside of a mechanical CAD model or inside of a electrical world or inside of a cost model or those kinds of things. That's what we're trying to do. Does that make sense? Or do you want to go into more details than that?
I think that makes sense. I mean, we can certainly go into some more detail. Maybe Nand, I'd be curious to get your perspective on how this looks specifically in the automotive context. You know, I think, Mark, you gave a great definition of systems engineering and that approach, I suppose, in general. Nand, perhaps you could talk about how are automotive companies approaching this?
So again, automotive companies doing their development processes by, let's say, feature function based, that what they can sell it to customers. So let's say lane keeping assist, or adaptive cruise control, and then they're flipping the development processes around that if you have to deliver this feature, which can be sold at a certain price in a vehicle, then what is needed to deliver that feature? So they flipped it around, the development processes, around that, right? Now, having said that, Mark is right about when he says there's 10,000 requirements or maybe even more, and there's all different types of requirements, and they will belong to different groups within the automotive world. So there's some algorithms need to make decisions. There are those type of things. And then there is traditional trade-off studies across attributes when you have to deliver, let's say, a noise performance versus a durability performance, those type of things. So there's all kinds of trades up and decision makings in those processes. So when you lay out the overall systems engineering approach, as Mark said, you do the architecture development, you do the concept modeling in the initial stage, then you are making certain decisions in that and you're selecting the right architectures. So you're doing between your software, network, and the hardware selection. And then moving on to the next step, now you're starting to put details on the designs. And during that design development process, you're again making similar trade-offs, but at a different level. And you are verifying, and this is where the whole concept of continuous integration and continuous development or continuous validation comes into play, that now you have these subsets that you don't have to wait till the end of the full vehicle product, but you're verifying these things as you're developing. Because there's a software piece in there, and what a software verification means versus a hardware durability test on a proving ground are two different things, right? But they are related. So that's all kind of automotive companies are adapting these processes of continuous development, iterating along the way. So you don't have to just wait for a traditional systems V, then you do the left side first and then you wait for the right hand side. This process is becoming more dynamic.
I think Brad Nan brings up an important point here is the traditional practice was to spec, then design, and then integrate. And we find the integration go and take place on the right side of the V as he described. They got to switch to this continuous integration as he's describing to start integrated and stay integrated. That means that you need to have behavioral models or functional descriptions of what it is you're after trying to accomplish early, and you're carrying that through the entire life cycle so you can continuously check to see how everything's working together.
So, Connor, this is, I mean, great discussion because this brings other points. This is disrupting the entire industry and the ecosystem. So in a traditional way, you could have what's called full service suppliers, and then you assign them certain responsibility and they develop their systems or subsystems and bring them back into the OEM level and integrate them, right? But you see one of the trends going on, a lot of the OEMs are bringing the critical things back in-house. And that could be a software development piece. Instead of giving it out to the supply base, they're bringing that in-house, right? Same thing in autonomous vehicle context. You have the chip design, and some of the leading companies are starting to bring even the chip design because that's where they think their intellectual property is there. So they're designing the chips, not just outsourcing it to the key suppliers, which they have done in the past. So now you can see fundamentally the workload and transparency within the groups is changing, and the business models are changing. So a lot of the supply base is then left that, hey, OEMs are going to design. If they're manufacturing side of it, they just build to print, that kind of stuff. But all the feature functions are being brought in-house. And again, this is again a migration and a shift. Bringing in the concept of what's changed is from full service supplier, a lot of OEMs are bringing development in-house, whether it is for software development or it could be also a chip development for autonomous vehicles. Some of the OEMs are bringing that in-house. So that changes the whole business model, how things are being done today versus traditionally for the last few decades.
And so then presumably, you know, bringing these additional things in makes the adoption of a systems engineering approach only more important, it would seem.
Exactly. It's not only systems engineering approach, but the trusted traceability and transparency of all that information within an OEM's organization, that becomes very, very important.
We're coming up on our time here for today. So I think to kind of wrap up, I'd be curious to get both of your perspectives on what you see as kind of the future, like how are companies going to move forward and take in what we've talked about today with systems engineering and digitalization and trusted traceability, Nand, which you just brought up. How are they going to take that in and use it to overcome the challenges we laid out in the first half, and hopefully to help us realize this idea of the autonomous vehicle? So Mark, maybe you'd like to start, what do you see as the future?
Well, so there's a realization that you got to get your act together at the earliest possible stages. Systems engineering uses the term define the problem before you solve it. So you have to do that. You got to start there with defining the problem. Once you get the problem defined, now you can start pushing it through the systems. Systems engineering capabilities and model-based systems engineering have been around for some number of years, but they're dramatically improving and they're moving rapidly. In our experience, it's not a tools problem anymore. We're starting to run into the interesting problems of organizations getting along and so forth and so on. So the idea is that you, in the past, just having this problem defined is one aspect of it, but you've got to have somewhere you can go with it. And so the result is you have all these different organizations with each of their own things. And as I pointed out earlier, Conway's Law says you're developing within your own silo and you're not thinking about what everybody else is going to do. So you have to have this integration capability that's going on across silos and needs to be implemented. Now, the tools are capable of doing that kind of integration. If you've got a system model, system architecture, those kinds of things carrying through the entire lifecycle. But what we found is that there's an organizational aspect of this. In other words, put it this way to you, you're dealing with the complex products, but this complex product is being developed in a complex organization. And that complex organization, of course, is living inside a complex world that has to deliver to in the outside world. So there's a culture shift aspect of this that's involved to be successful in implementing these cross-domain, cross-silo kinds of problems. So a change in one silo needs to ripple to the other sides, and then you need to do this overall balancing act that requires a different way of thinking about the problem. And a lot of organizations aren't prepared to do that. They have to go deal with these integration problems, not only at the tool, at the product itself, but across organizations as well. So that's why we've been in our practices have been working what we call a model-based system engineering maturity approach, where you have to see where you are, and then you can begin to know where the best place to apply the tools at what point to get the best possible return on your investment. So there's a cultural aspect on there that you need to consider as well. I just bring that in here. You asked, what can we do? The tools are ahead of us, and we need to organizationally get ourselves together so we can take advantage of what they can do.
Yeah, I fully agree with everything what Mark said. Culture, collaboration, working together within an organization and its ecosystem, which includes the supply base, is a very important aspect of delivering the digital transformation. But just to build on that, digital transformation is a journey. So based on that maturity assessment of an organization, Mark mentioned, one can start with where the biggest pain point is or where the biggest opportunity is. And it's best to get started, start small in that area, and then grow bigger for this end-to-end overall digital transformation following model-based systems engineering approach to deliver something meaningful for business, which will make a downstream impact. So people have to believe in digital transformation technologies, things like digital twin, and start that journey somewhere. And I know many companies all over the globe who are at the forefront of these technologies are taking their entire factory shop floors and digitizing. They still don't know what they're going to do with it, but they know this is going to help them to build virtual factories. So they get on this journey, they spend initial few months or years in collecting all this information. And one of the big challenges then is you have all this data, what to do with it? Once you have a physical data, then you have a virtual data, then you can start to see how do you bring virtual and physical together, and it can help you towards making those decisions effectively and start to deliver business results. So that's all part of the digital transformation journey. But when you do these kind of things, culture, as Mark said, is very important, organization culture. And what I see in my mind in the industry, it works the best when it is supported by the top of the organization, which can bring many different groups together and give them a joint objective that's our end goal, what we need to achieve as a business, and that works the best. Of course, the bottom-up approach is always good from a technical standpoint. You know, at the end of the day, you have engineers who take passion and develop more technical things. But as Mark said, this is not just a technical or a tools or a solution thing. This is changing the culture, changing the way things need to be done in the future world of automotive.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for taking the time to talk with me today. I think that's a really good kind of nugget that we landed on there. It's obviously technology can help us do a lot of things. The culture has to catch up as well. So I think that's a nice place to wrap up for today. So Nand and Mark, thank you for being on the Future Car Podcast, and I appreciate your time. And I'd like to thank the listeners for tuning in as well. We will see you guys in the next one. Thank you.